He is fearful of the apocalypse because he heard apocalyptic messages in an AC/DC record. 10 Cloverfield Lane, directed by Dan Trachtenberger. Trachtenberger is a special burger by
Trachtenberger
McDonald's.
Trachtenberger. You keep saying it so that you...
Trachtenberger. Stop it.
Trachtenberger. Sounds delicious.
Kurosawa is the third man.
Michelle Ryan Johnson.
The Phi Effect.
From Milwaukee, welcome to episode 34 of the Phi Effect podcast. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Matthew Baltz.
And Jason Callen.
Jacob is out hiding in a bunker today for fear of the apocalypse, so we're doing this episode without him. Miss you, Jacob.
Coward.
Today our episode theme will be rabbits, inspired by our review of Zootopia. But first we're going to be discussing 10 Cloverfield Lane, directed by Dan Trachtenberg.
I focused on being prepared. I saved your life by bringing you here. I knew this day would come. It's not safe out there. Something's coming.
After a car accident, a woman wakes up in a bunker with two men who claim that the world is coming to an end. This movie stars John Goodman, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and John Gallagher. According to Box Office Mojo, over the weekend this film grossed $24 million, and that is with a budget of $5 million, so it has already surpassed its budget. Its modest budget, at least.
Yeah, it started in the, like, Paramount, their low budget. They had like a low-budget subsidiary, whatever you want to call it, that folded. That was all like $5 million and under. Like that's where they produced.
I remember that. So this was one of those.
It's originally, yeah, it was one of those.
Do you remember when you first saw the trailer for this, Jason?
I don't know. Not particularly. I mean, I remember seeing it for the first time, and it was probably on the internet. It wasn't in like the theater, you know. So probably when it was originally released.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of buzz about this movie because it was so veiled behind J.J. Abrams' new Star Wars film. Nobody even knew that this was in production until the trailer unearthed itself, and so there was a lot of hype around what it supposedly is about because the story is very concealed. But I know there were a lot of theories, and J.J. Abrams very quickly came out and said, yes, it is technically a blood relative of the Cloverfield universe, but it does not have the Cloverfield monster in it. And so that got a lot of people thinking, and J.J. Abrams being the kind of guy who likes to hide secrets and instigate these viral marketing campaigns and really throw everybody for a loop in the run-up into a movie's release, it just kept garnering hype and hype. And so I'm curious what your initial thoughts were about this. What did you expect before you sat down for this movie?
Well, I everything's kind of blown because how they titled it and how they marketed it. Honestly, like, I expected exactly what I got, which was a movie, you know, about captivity with an ending that indicated some like extraterrestrial force. So I got exactly what I expected because of the title and because of you know, Abrams coming in and changing, because originally this was like The Cellar, and I think there was another name that, and originally it was not like written as a blood relative of Cloverfield. Shortly thereafter, like, Abrams came in and was like, oh, hey, and kind of turned it into that. But its effectiveness is completely lost because of the title for me. But just by putting that in there and making it this, and marketing it as this blood relative, it loses all the effect, all the, like, I was just barreling forward. So I guess I'll just stop there. Yeah, the effect is diminished by the title, and it's a really, it's everything you expect. It's exactly as I described.
Yeah, it was really difficult because, like you said, the title leads you to believe that there's some sort of monster in it because Cloverfield was a monster movie. But when he says that the Cloverfield monster isn't in this, and when he also says there's a different type of monster in this, like, I couldn't feel comfortable with that answer because, again, this is a guy who really revels in secrets and surprising people. So I think my initial theory was that, okay, he's going to try and trick us. It's going to be people. People are the monster. And if there is some sort of big apocalyptic occurrence happening, I could see the government like really cracking down kind of in a similar way that they did in the original Cloverfield movie in certain scenes. Did you see the original Cloverfield movie?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Cloverfield at all. I can't even really watch it. Like, it's the shaky cam aesthetic in that is like headache inducing to me, and I can handle that generally, like, to a certain degree, but it's so poorly done for me in that film that I just can't stand it. Plus, I don't know, everyone's kind of obnoxious and I just don't like it at all. I do like everything Matt Reeves has done subsequently, but I'm not a fan of Cloverfield.
I have not grown very fond of Cloverfield either. I think from what I remember hearing, J.J. Abrams kind of encouraged the idea because he wanted a monster that a lot of people in America, that they could enjoy in the same way that a lot of the Japanese population enjoy the symbolism of Godzilla. And right. So I feel like he did not...
Yeah, that was pretty big reach to like going in trying to create some like culturally iconic creature. You know, you gotta, if you're gonna try and do that, you better have something like more substantial to say, because I don't really feel like Cloverfield had that much to say about, you know, security or the state of the world or whatever it was, you know, it was intending or whatever you might kind of want a movie like that to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, like in the way that you know, the Japanese, the original is, you know, very much about the bombings in World War II. And...
Well, I've heard after the fact that they tried to tie in some sort of symbolism about 9/11, which I think is kind of a weak argument to make.
Yeah, extremely weak. What year was Cloverfield?
2008.
Okay. Yeah, I, you know.
And like you said, the aesthetic of the shaky cam found footage, I don't think it helps the film at all.
It's
like
terrible.
The story or the style.
And it seems exaggerated too. It seems like more shaky than like it would actually be if you were really trying to do that. Like, it seems like you could, that kind of technology like stabilizes itself a little bit and like you wouldn't have to have it. Like, it's just so obnoxious. At least you don't have to look at T.J. Miller because he's the one behind the camera.
All right. So with that in mind, having seen Cloverfield, were you excited to see this movie?
I was interested mostly because of Goodman's participation and the fact that he was playing like a bad guy, or at least it seemed like he was going to be a bad guy. So for that, and I do enjoy to a certain degree captivity movies if they have, you know, if they're interesting, if they're well done, which I mean, we can get into that more in spoilers, but I thought this one, as far as that portion of the movie was concerned, I thought was done pretty well.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the big selling points for this movie, and if I can even sneak into our initial reactions, he still is one of my favorite parts of this movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He was the best part of this movie, I would say.
His acting, his appearance, the way that he figures into the story. I like, you've mentioned that you like captivity stories, and I do have a weakness for those as well, but I like kind of not so stable people. I mean, if you watch the trailer, you're going to get the impression that this guy, he has something going on with him.
Right.
And so I like how they play with his character, how you don't necessarily know.
Right. There's like moments where you think maybe he is just doing this all to help everyone and he's not nuts. But then, you know, obviously, as things go, we won't go into spoilers quite yet. But
This movie does have several, I would define them as chapters, because there are several twists that are revealed to you like in progression throughout the movie. And before we get into spoilers, I think maybe we can discuss a little bit of the story before ruining much of it.
We can certainly try. Where do you want to start?
More like, how much can we say about it?
Well, there's certainly, I think, you know, there are definitely like moments a couple times where like it changes your view of the situation, mm-hmm. because you get information most of the time along with the characters.
That felt like the entire structure of the movie is basically setting you up for something and then countering it with a twist and then setting it up again and countering that. and right. just letting these different chapters kind of change your opinion of people and what may be going on, because you never truly are told what's going on or what these characters
right.
are.
Well, because they're ultimately there's multiple things going on. Don't want to be too specific, but there are definitely, it's definitely not completely straightforward. There's more than one agenda and more than one rationale for being there.
Well, we've discussed John Goodman and his acting and his character. What did you feel about the other characters played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Gallagher?
I liked Winstead. She's one of these actresses who I know I've seen a lot, but I never can kind of like place her. But I know I've liked her before. But yeah, I thought she was really good as the captive, because Gallagher is not really in the same situation. He wanted to be there. He tried. He was sneaking in is the reason he, is there. So he doesn't have like the kind of the same fears and the same skepticism that she does. He's more on board for most of the time.
He seems to be more of a neutral grounds between these two extremes that are in the bunker.
Right, right, exactly.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman.
Right.
He also, I think, brings a lot of emotional depth to this film. Like, throughout the movie, we basically have to fill some time with stories about who these people are, what
right.
they've experienced,
sure.
and, try and get us to relate to them a little bit. So I think everyone delivers a little bit of story time throughout the movie. John Gallagher's, I think, it reaches the furthest to grab your emotions, and they allude to that again later on throughout the movie to give you some more of that. So he's a much more sympathetic character than, I think, either of these other people. If all we have are three people, I'm just going to say he's the most sympathetic.
Yeah, I don't know. She's certainly sympathetic. We don't really have, other than like just leaving her husband at the opening.
Was it a husband or was it a boyfriend?
Well, it was either a husband or a fiance, because she left the ring behind with whatever it was, the keys.
Yeah, I would almost feel like we spoiled a little bit, but it's literally
the first
shot
of the movie. That's not a spoiler.
Her character, she is a strong female character. Like, as soon as she's in the bunker, she's immediately looking at what she has at hand, and she's crafting things and using them to her advantage.
Yeah.
And in the first sequence, you see that she's good with her hands. She creates fashion. She creates clothing. So you know that really helps out with her character and her character development. And I think that was one of the best things that they could have done for the characters in this movie, was allow us to see who they are and feel comfortable with how they handle themselves throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
The rest of the movie because of that.
It's very cool how they incorporate her being like a fashion designer or aspiring fashion designer into the plot at different points. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really, really well done. Good point.
Completely off topic, but I couldn't help but think of Tim Robbins' character from War of the Worlds, Steven Spielberg's film.
Oh yeah, I thought of that movie more than once during this movie, as well as certain parts of Shyamalan's Signs a couple times, which is neither here nor there. It's just...
But it's definitely its own, it definitely develops its own style. It's very up close with these characters, and I think the camera work is very fun and open and free and colorful at times.
Yeah, it's for being in a confined space, I certainly thought it did a better job of highlighting the space, or I guess technically spaces, in this film more than, Room, which I complained about a lot. Mm-hmm. As far as the captivity scenes and Ex Machina too, for another recent example of a captivity film, although that had some interesting things going on. I thought this was probably the better of the I didn't realize we'd seen so many captivity films, but probably the best of the three as far as handling the space. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess in order to make you feel more comfortable with a lot of the movements that happen throughout this movie, and especially the ending, it really does need to establish where you are, what room is connected to what room, and so it does walk you through that very well.
Right, yeah, it is important, because there's scenes that rely on like kind of the movement through the bunker for their effect, and if you're not oriented by the time that scene comes, then you have then it's it's like a cheat. It's not going to function as well.
So as far as chapters and the progression of the film, without giving away any spoilers, did you have any personal favorite section of the movie? Did you feel like the movie successfully resolved itself towards the ending? How did it progress for you?
I guess, I preferred the first portion of the film. The cold open was great, too. I'm a I don't know if I've talked about, I'm a fan of cold opens, and I thought this one was really excellent. But then, you know, after the cold open, that first segment where she like wakes up and we kind of discover things and meet the characters was the best portion. Although, you know, like I said before, the whole bunker sequence is great, and that is the majority of the film. It's just, I guess, the climax that I felt was really unsatisfying. As far as resolution, I mean, yeah, you don't actually get the resolution with the Goodman character that I really wanted, because I think maybe I was, you know, I was slightly, you know, sympathetic towards him, even though he's, as you would expect him to be, kind of crazy. So yeah, so for me, it worked until the end, basically.
So would you say you liked this movie overall?
I don't know if I would say I liked it. I would say I liked most of it. I don't know. I can't just flat out say I liked it, because the ending was a real disappointment. And again, it probably wouldn't have been had Abrams not been involved and changed the title and connected it to that, you know, to the previous film.
Yeah, I still have no idea why they wanted to tie it in.
Like, that, this would be great if you were watching this captivity movie and you thought it was just like going to be about these three characters with this kind of, you know, unidentified happenings going out, and then came out, you know, mm-hmm. then get out to that point, and it would have been fantastic. It could have really worked, but it's so anticlimactic because, for one thing, you know what's happening. You know what's going to happen, because it's just a matter of time before they have to get to the whatever it's going to be. So it's just, you know, it's just kind of waiting and waiting, and all you're waiting, but all this other cool stuff is going on, and these characters are being built, and it's just kind of, you know, it's like a letdown, really, because
that probably is my biggest problem with this movie. Not because I'm expecting it all to pay off, not because I'm expecting to know what's happening above ground, because throughout the movie that is the entire mystery, even though they have everything else, all these other conflicts going on underground, which are entertaining.
But it's never a mystery to us. I mean, it's a mystery to them.
No. It's a mystery. I mean, it's a mystery to me. I'm still trying to figure out what's going on above ground, because I know they're not going to tell me, like, at the beginning. They're going to keep me wondering even while they're trying to entertain me with these character dynamics. And so, yeah, I'm entertained, but the whole time it's in the back of my head, like, what's going on above ground? How is that going to play into everything?
There is no tension. We know what it is.
No, we don't.
Yes, of course we do.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do. Of course we do.
All right, let's go into spoilers. Let's climb down this bunker stairwell into spoilers.
I think we need to.
Warning. Spoilers ahead. Warning. You are now entering spoiler territory.
All right. It is aliens. It is aliens. I mean, okay, I guess technically in the original, like, is it ever determined that they came, like, from, that they're extraterrestrial, like the monsters?
Oh, in the movie Cloverfield?
Right.
There was a rumor or conspiracy that in the final shot of the Cloverfield movie, like this home footage that he was shooting with his girlfriend, that there is a satellite crashing into the water in the background, which, like, you can see if you freeze frame it and play it in slow motion.
It was never, like, claimed. I guess my question is, so technically, like, the monster could have come from
underwater
or some other place, you know, on Earth.
I think they say it came from underwater, but they don't go beyond that.
So, maybe you don't technically know it's going to be an alien. I knew it was going to be an alien from day one, because it seemed like there was no other choice. Like, it was the obvious. It was the obvious thing.
I'm
surprised to hear that you were really wondering. Like, I'm
a sucker. I can suspend my disbelief.
I can suspend my disbelief too. But they didn't give you anything to suspend. They told you everything up front. Cloverfield, here it is, a blood relative. Okay, so what does it have to have?
Yeah.
What's the one thing that it has to have?
A monster.
A monster. So.
But what kind of monster?
But who cares? I mean, like, does it matter? Like, obviously it's not, I mean, I choose alien because I just assume that the original one, like, was an alien.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't, you know, even though, I guess, the traditional, how do you say it? Kaiju are generally from Earth. Okay.
Well, but, for us simpletons who could not think for ourselves. I mean, if you go along with, you know, what people are telling you and leading you to believe, they're not telling you what it is.
Yeah.
I was still banking on, you know, the twist being human beings are the monsters. It's the government. The house is lighting up because there's a helicopter coming up behind it or something.
Can you imagine the uproar that would cause, like, if you didn't include some kind of monster? Like, well, if people got out of this and they were like, what? No, what? Like, you're going to sink the whole franchise you're so desperately trying to seed with this blood relative.
So, okay, so you were expecting it to be aliens and monsters.
Yes.
Did you expect it to have that grandioso of a climax above ground when she does escape?
Yes, I expected a conflict. I didn't expect it to be, like, straight out of War of the Worlds. But yeah, I was expecting a conflict that she would obviously triumph somehow, some way. And that scene was kind of obnoxious, like the way it was at like dusk. So it got darker and darker until you couldn't see any of the action, really, including the like which pitch black monster, you know, you could hardly see it. At least in the theater I was in, like it was really hard to kind of distinguish things by the time that scene was finishing up.
Yeah.
Until things start, you know, until the fire started to illuminate things a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like I was saying, that's exactly what I was expecting. And it was kind of like you get to it, the door opens and it's just like, oh, finally, let's just get to this stupid connection to the other movie. You know, you had a good, like you had a good hour and, you know, whatever, 30 minutes, take your 15 minutes to connect it to the other movie so that, you know, somewhere down the line you can ruin some other good script and connect it to this franchise as well. Yeah, so not a big fan of the ending. But and like even like as a confrontation and as like a feature for like effects and stuff, I didn't think the effects were particularly good.
Well,
I didn't,
the if creature, you could, if you could see
exactly,
the effects underneath,
like
all
when,
the darkness.
When you could see it, you know, what you could see of the creatures were not impressive. The ship was kind of weird and indistinct. And, you know, again, it was so dark that it's just like, wow, you know, it looks, they must've spent like $4,900,000 by the time they got to visual effects, because it seems like they kind of left it as an afterthought, which is unusual because it's the climax of your great, great blood relative. Whatever. I'm getting mean, so I'm just going
to
say
that. I'm just beginning to doubt any of your enjoyment for this film.
No, I liked the bunker stuff. I thought the John Goodman stuff was great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kind of, now that we're in spoilers, like the twist where it's like with all the stuff with his daughter, basically, and like the picture, and like that's like one of those moments you were talking about where everything kind of, your perspective changes, because now like you can't, you know, you've discovered this lie that he's told. So now he's like another level of crazy. She's less crazy. Like it's like they just kind of like keep bouncing your affections back and forth.
Yeah, they've got to continue the suspense. I mean, all this movie is a suspense, and it does a really good job at the suspenseful scenes. But when that suspense ends and it requires some activity,
right?
It takes really good. I think it paces itself really good in the bunker. Yes, I got tense when I should probably not have needed to get tense.
Yeah, well, the soundtrack was so kind of silly, the way it played with like scenes that were like not really, they had no like payoff, but they had, the music would swell and get all like oh my
gosh. Board game.
Or yeah, like the board game, or the like, even like earlier when she's in the, you know, when she's in her room before, I think even before she meets him, like or right before she meets him. I don't know. There was a couple moments like that.
But yes, suspense. I'm going to put that in capital letters. This movie is all about the suspense of what's above ground. Who is this character? What happened to the daughter? This and that and this and that.
Yeah. It pretty much all lies in like in him and like discovering the truth about him. That's kind of where the... And yes, there's the above ground stuff, but...
I mean, you could go further and question Emmett himself. You literally don't know anything about these characters. After speculation, it's still not confirmed.
Yeah, Emmett's, you could wonder for a while. They make it pretty clear though after like the first act that Emmett's kind of exactly what he says he is, just kind of like just scared and trying to, you know, actually acquire safety. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I say, I can't really say that I liked it. I didn't hate it. It basically, Goodman is, it's worth it for Goodman to see him in this kind of role, because he's very good at it, and he brings a lot of nuance that you wouldn't necessarily expect for this type of movie.
I'm going to say it again, suspense. I enjoyed the suspense. The payoffs didn't really do it for me. When they get above ground, again, the suspense of what's going on, it does a good job of pacing it out and leading you to believe there's danger around the corner. And then when the danger is happening, it completely switches into one of those mainstream action monster movies that I tend to avoid in the theater.
Yeah.
Because you've seen it before, and in this case, you've seen it better.
Certainly.
It's a very tightly knit story with a lot of foreshadowing problems that are solved by things that we've seen on screen, which are put together by puzzle pieces. The way that she uses the aerosol can to break the lock, the way that she uses the Molotov cocktail that's in the car. Again, it's her being resourceful, but I'd like to see her using the resources that are not thrown into our face ahead of time and in a very blatant foreshadowing way.
Well, I think the lock thing I thought was interesting because he like essentially taught her that. Like, that's not something she had in her, you know, repertoire of tricks. Like, he used that and told her the story and, you know, and planted the seed of an idea. So that I dug, but wait, what was the other example you
had? When she uses the Molotov cocktail.
Oh, the Molotov cocktail. Yeah, that one was kind of like cheap. I don't know. I felt because he mentions the bottle like earlier. He's like, oh, didn't have time to grab the booze, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Like, really? Why didn't you have time to grab the booze? Because you had a box full of things that, assuming like everything was, you know, all over the place after the accident, like you were just scooping things up, why wasn't there time?
If you're getting stuck in a bunker, you remember the booze in your car.
But he can't remember the booze, because if he remembers the booze, then that's in the bunker and it's not in the car when she needs it to, you know, solve her problems. So that was a pretty cheap one. Like, they could have, it would have been like, if they wanted to do that, they should have like not have him had that line that about not bringing it in. Like, they should have just like had it roll out from under the seat or something. Like he like didn't realize he forgot it, or, you know, or something. But whatever. Yeah.
What was your reaction when you saw the woman outside with illnesses approach the door?
Well, I mean, that is the payoff moment of the big scene from the trailer, which I liked that sequence, the whole stealing of the keys and smashing him in the face. All you see in the trailer. And then you get the that's like the answer for the trailer. Like, that's that moment where you're like, oh, this is it. We're not finishing this. And I don't know, it's like, yeah, I guess I did expect at that point, like, they were going to show the aliens, like, they were going to show whatever was really going on. Mm-hmm. So to see the woman, I guess, was kind of a surprise. And, you know, obviously they were continuing to try and, like, draw out the suspense of what's actually going on out there, because you don't get anything from her. You can't distinguish. Everything that Goodman says could still be plausible. There's nothing to make you think otherwise with her arrival. But that scene really works well, you know.
It makes sure that your curiosities about the outside world are quelled enough to concentrate on what's happening inside the bunker.
Right. And it's set up well enough too, with her like kind of paying attention when she, you know, you see her watching the door when he you know, gives her the tour, shows her the pigs. I can't remember their names. You know, so it's set up really nicely, and it's really an effective sequence. As there are many effective sequences when they're in the bunker, but once that door opens, man,
the apocalypse does happen.
Yeah, the apocalypse of the screenplay.
I guess the only thing that I want to bring up even is when John Goodman, arising from the vat of spilled acid, and hopefully having a face that was just melted
right.
and disgusting and gory, and he would be the monster, and my hopes and dreams were crushed to see. No, he's only half of his face was melted.
Right. It did seem like he was gonna be a lot more messed up than that. Like, he went face down in that. Like, I thought his whole like front would just be like just totally disintegrated, and like, but they didn't even. They obviously
it would have been great. I would have loved it.
Must have been like budget thing or something, because yeah, I would have loved it too, if it had been done right. But even what they did, I thought was like kind of like not particularly good makeup effects. Like, it seemed like it was like more CGI effects than actual makeup effects. That said, I did like her like final escape, like that sequence, right, and how she used how she like ended up getting him to that state.
Any other thoughts on 10 Cloverfield Lane?
No, I think I've railed enough about 10 Cloverfield Lane. Good for a portion, dissatisfying ending.
Are you excited for the prospective sequel?
I don't know. I wouldn't say I'm excited, but I'm not going to like boycott it necessarily.
I don't know how, I mean,
it has to be like a much bigger thing now. Like it's going to have to be like a full-scale alien invasion movie if you're going to follow, especially if they're going to continue with her character, if they're going to actually stay with that, or if they're just going to go off and do some other like offshoot blood relative, whatever Abrams wants to designate it as.
I can definitely say it's going to be something different. I don't think it's going to follow her directly, but I think it will try to pull a different creative perspective on what is happening.
I mean, at this point, you have to have like an all-out alien thing, right? I mean, this movie is basically, if that's how you're going to, if this is going to be like the jump start to something, then, I mean, you've set it up as like a big alien onslaught. She's like going into the war, you know, so there's obviously going to be wars like that all over the planet, not just in Houston.
True, but we still don't know what this Cloverfield universe is. For all we know, the aliens are attacking at the same time that the Cloverfield monster is attacking, and it's even bigger and more diverse, or there could be some other, you know, outlook. I'm not going to predict what J.J. Abrams is going to pull off.
It wouldn't surprise me for Hollywood to overload it with aliens and monsters and like put a thousand different things in it, because somehow the more is better aesthetic has not run its course yet, even through like dozens of examples of how it doesn't work.
Let the theories fly.
Yeah, so I don't know. Are you excited for the future of this franchise or franchises? I don't even know how they're going to...
I don't know. I'm excited about the theories and the possibilities and the creativity that'll work itself up to it, because he's got to pull something different. He's not gonna go the same route as everybody else.
I know. I'm not a fan of Abrams either. So, I mean, we were talking about Cloverfield and Reeves, but...
All right, let's move on to our episode theme.
Alrighty.
Every episode, we choose a theme connected with our previous review. Last time, we talked about Zootopia, and so this episode, we've chosen films with rabbits. I'm sure Jacob is very sad that he could not join us for this.
Yes, and talk about Watership Down, which I'm sure would have been his choice.
I'm sure it would have been as well. Jason, why don't you start us off?
All right, for this week's theme of rabbits, I chose Roman Polanski's 1965 film Repulsion, a horror film starring Catherine Deneuve, I believe is how you say it, his second feature film about sexually repressed, probably the best term for her, woman who lives with her sister and is in constant contact with her sister's sexuality and is at like this point in her life where she is, coming of age, I guess, even though she's probably a little older than you would tend to think about people that are coming of age, but that's kind of the vibe. And she is just kind of overwhelmed by sexuality, and it turns her kind of mad. It's one of Polanski's kind of confinement films. Speaking of confinement, where the majority of it takes place in like a single apartment building or apartment complex, well, that's where the tension lies anyway. In shooting this apartment, but it's one of the most unsettling movies. I still watch it and am just creeped out by it and by her like progression through this repression as it kind of eats away at her and, you know, just absolutely makes her go crazy. Yeah, one of the best horror films you'll ever see. I had something else I wanted to say, but it's slipping through me. Oh, the connection to rabbits, right? At one point, and you know, we're loose with theme, so this is how it's gonna work. At one point, her mother or her sister, who she lives with, is going to cook a rabbit. And she takes it out and, you know, is about, you know, in the midst of preparing it. But then her boyfriend, the crude boyfriend who, you know, Deneuve's character, can't stand and who repulses her, swoops in and decides that, you know, they're going to go out to dinner to eat instead. So the rabbit ends up being at first put back into the fridge. But then later on, Deneuve takes it out again and it just sits on like a stool and rots for the entirety of the movie and just gets like more disgusting and kind of like mirrors her decaying mind, a pretty effective little symbol Yeah, creepy, great movie. Have you ever seen Repulsion?
I have seen it. Long time ago. Okay. Probably need to rewatch it. I remember it being very stylized.
Oh, extremely. I mean, Polanski is, you know, he's not afraid of style. And like I say, it's one of these movies that he has done a lot of movies that are contained in a single
area, or a couple, or
a very limited number of rooms or spaces.
I feel like most of them could probably have been sourced out of a play.
Yeah, a lot of them have been, especially recent ones, but certainly some others that haven't could have been, Repulsion included. You know, you could certainly turn it into a really creepy play that would just like leave everyone unsettled and probably not wanting to go have dinner.
Way to stretch that theme.
Right? I was trying to come up with something, and I was like, I'm not doing Donnie Darko. It's too easy. It's too stupid. Like, I mean, not the movie, but it's just as a choice, it wasn't right.
It's so too obvious.
This is another one that's on my favorite 100 movies that I've tried to use for theme whenever I can, because it's easy and, you know, whatever works.
Well, down the road, I'll be sure to include a more relevant theme, and then you're just going to hit yourself over the head.
Oh, well. I'm sure I can find something. Let's hear yours.
All right, yeah, mine is pretty predictable. I went with 1950s Harvey, directed by Henry Koster. This film stars the wonderful and whimsical James Stewart in a role that he is very good at. He's a very mild-mannered, very optimistic, somewhat mentally troubled human being who claims that he has befriended a 6-foot-tall bunny rabbit. This bunny rabbit, however, is invisible to everybody else. And so, you know, for us, the audience as well, we just clearly claim him as crazy. But, you know, throughout the subtleties that slowly reveal themselves of whether or not Harvey, the name of the bunny rabbit, is a real figure or just a figment of his imagination, throughout all of that, we learn about these characters and we see them interact with each other, and they decide, you know, how to handle Jimmy Stewart's character. His name is Elwood P. Dowd. And so the movie progresses, and it's just a very fun trip. It's a very whimsical trip, very delightful in one of the perfect classic Hollywood movies that you could sit down for. And, you know, one of the main characters is an invisible 6-foot-tall bunny rabbit who apparently inspired the rabbit in Donnie Darko.
Oh, nice. I have never seen Harvey. It's one of the shames of my life.
Just one of them.
Just one of many.
I will probably kick myself later for not choosing Inland Empire by David Lynch, but
ooh, that would have been a fine choice.
you could use a David Lynch movie for practically anything.
You probably could. There's a lot going on there, so you could probably sneak something for pretty much any theme, any Lynch movie. we'll just try that for the next 3 weeks. See if you can fit a David Lynch movie into the theme. Well, what's the upcoming theme? What do you got planned for us?
We'll find out. We'll find out. Well, that's going to conclude today's review of 10 Cloverfield Lane. If you are in the Milwaukee area, you can catch this movie in wide release at most theaters in town, including iPic Theaters at Bayshore, most Marcus Theaters, AMC Mayfair Mall, and AMC Mayfair Mall. For more podcast episodes, you can find us on Facebook or drop by thefieffect.com and browse our archives. If you have any questions or comments, send a message to contact@thefieffect.com and let us know that you're listening and what you think of our discussions. Join us next time when our episode theme is going to be bunkers. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
You are listening to Matthew Baltz.
And Jason Callum.
This is the Fie Effect Podcast. Thank you for listening.
No, I like the first theory that it's nice that there wasn't any rape or any sexual component at all, really. Just sad, lonely John Goodman wanting to remake his daughter.
Remake. Must remake daughter.
Don't have Ex Machina technology to create own cyborg daughter.
Are you a woman? Great, you got the job.